Chapter 36 Wyland. Three guardsmen were sent in to collect me while the rest waited outside. I saw them out on the steps as the front door swung shut, all looking into the establishment like children who were afraid to be caught peeking. I resisted smiling when I saw them. Of the three who drew short lots, two were young, while one was older, though not elderly. I estimated his age to be somewhat less than my own had been when I died, perhaps somewhere in his early 40s. I assumed he was their captain. The other two crept in behind him as if he was a shield. I'd arranged myself at the table to face the front door and watched them come, not really trying to hide. I even winked at one of the younger guards, who responded by swallowing past what appeared to be a lodged chicken bone before grasping the handle of his club. We stared each other down as the small group came to stand near the edge of my table. The other patrons of that establishment had given up all semblance of propriety. They gaped openly at us, their meals and drinks forgotten. The captain stared at me. He had a brown mustache, just tending toward gray, which left yellowed streaks of fading color under his nose. I waited for him to speak, but it seemed he could not. "You boys look hungry," I said. Their eyes all widened in unison, and I had to work at keeping a straight face. They all looked as though they'd been addressed by a long-dead relative. Then the captain cleared his throat and whispered,
"Sir, I'm sent. You are commanded to please come outside with us, sir."
I reviewed the badge insignia adorning their tunics. The older man's rested upon laurels. Certainly the captain, then.
"Are you well, Captain?" I asked.
"Sir?"
"I asked if you're well. You seem unsettled."
His face flushed a sickly pink, and he straightened his spine.
"Never mind how I seem, sir. You're not wanted here. Need to come with us."
I made a show of looking concerned. Taking the napkin from a place setting, I dabbed at the corners of my mouth, though my water had gone untouched, and looked around the room. Everyone stared openly at me. Their eyes betrayed fear, as if I was infected with a plague that would spread before long.
"It would appear you're correct," I said.
I placed my cup in the center of the table, wondering how long it would sit there before someone collected it. Perhaps they would simply carry the table outside with the cup on it, chop the lot into splinters, and burn the remains. Then I stood and walked past the guards, opened the door, and stepped outside before they had time to gather themselves. I heard them rushing to come up behind me as the door swung shut. An ingenious little mechanism, that door. It closed automatically by way of a rope and sack of rocks used as a counterweight. I assumed it was intended to keep the warm air in. It worked well. Outside, I nearly burst out laughing when I counted 20 guards all lined up shoulder to shoulder and brandishing clubs as though they stood on the edge of a territory war. It was silly, all those people out there just for me. When I descended the short flight of steps to join them, they all moved several paces backward.
"I must have made someone very unhappy," I said.
Their faces and all the street around them temporarily lit with the warm light of the cradle, then faded back to shadow as the door swung shut behind me. I heard the captain's voice say,
"He came peacefully."
"Ah, indeed, yes he did," I agreed. "Please do not bludgeon him."
A wall of eyes darted from me to a place just behind me, the captain, I supposed. We all stood around staring at each other for a moment. I think we were waiting to see what the other would do first. Pretty soon I suspected they wouldn't do anything at all. They would just stand there, staring until sunlight.
"You men have a wagon?"
Several of them stiffened, but said nothing. I suspected we'd all met once before.
"Any of you lot know the old sheriff, Geffen? He would have been working here as early as 2 years ago, perhaps."
"No sheriff in Plotzdorf by that name, sir,"
the captain muttered from behind me. I turned to look at him, but he wouldn't meet me eye to eye.
"I see," I muttered, thinking. Then, Any of you ever hear the name Udo of Theodiscus?
I heard glove leather creaking tightly around wooden handles.
That's what he said last time,
one of them whispered. He was shushed down by his brothers. I fought the stupid grin threatening to overtake my face. I'm not sure how well I did. They were all so nervous. I hadn't the slightest interest in hurting these men, and it was not lost on me that any pains I took to put them at ease would only be interpreted as a threat. The entire situation was preposterous.
Look, I began, I suspect one of you has killed me.
One of them dropped his bludgeon with a clatter and took off running down Riverside. A few moments later, two other guards followed suit.
Gareki! Austin!
The captain shouted. They might as well have been deaf. Their footsteps did not so much as stutter in their escape.
Your force appears to be eroding, I said.
They all fell back to silence again. I finally sighed, thoroughly dissatisfied with the whole arrangement.
I don't have all night, gentlemen. I know you're trying to decide what to do with me. Well, as luck would have it, I have the solution you need. Give me a cart, a horse, and the food and water necessary to care for it. I promise to leave this city and never come back if you do.
Several of the guards appeared to be thinking it over, but the captain said,
I couldn't do that. Such things are paid for out of the municipal fund. It's not mine to give.
Ah, but you are tempted, eh?
Sorely, sir.
I nodded. I turned around to face him, putting the rest of the mob at my back. I didn't feel as though they were of any more concern.
A compromise, then. Have one of your men cart me away. Shackle my hands together and throw me in the back. Then, when we get where we're going, he can bring the cart back here.
Where are you going, then?
Asked the captain. Colmar. His eyes bugged.
That far?
Regretfully so.
He began to bluster.
All the way to the Mittlera. Gods preserve my bleeding spirit.
What's your name, Captain?
He hesitated, then,
Wyland.
Thank you. I'm pleased.
Wyland, the king wants to see me. If word hasn't gotten to him yet that I've been here, it will soon enough. Rumors travel, and this is not one you can contain.
Why does he want to see you?
Well, that's business between me and him.
Never mind that now. The thing you need to consider, what you need to think very carefully on, is that you, being his subject, could do a lot toward your own personal prosperity by seeing that I reach him.
You're an assassin of some kind, he bristled.
Wyland, honestly, do I look like I pose any threat at all to a giant?
They all looked at each other uncertainly while I grew frustrated. It was clear they didn't intend to jail me or kill me at that point. Neither action would have ended in the desired outcome. They wanted to be rid of me immediately. If they jailed me, I'd still be a problem in the morning. Killing me was equally pointless. I would just come back. But they still didn't know what to do. I think they resisted my wishes on principle. Jailers simply did not bow to the instructions of their prisoners. On a whim, I retreated marginally within myself and sent,
Are you listening to this?
I am,
came her immediate reply.
Good. Is there anything you can do to help this thing along?
Such as what?
She laughed.
Send the Dvergas along to ask them nicely?
I don't know. You're a goddess. Send them a sign.
Oh, now this? I thought I was supposed to listen to my god.
Are you being petty?
Gods aren't petty. We just know better than to solve every petty little problem. This is something you need to consider. You can't operate like this as a god. Soon enough, the only thing you'll have time for is doing favors.
Fine, I'll figure it out.
They're starting to fidget anyway. I still think you're being petty, though.
Wyland, I said, what are your intentions here? We can't stand on this street for eternity. I was thinking of just marching you out the south gate and locking the bar. You can be someone else's problem.
It's no good, I said. It's a long way to Colmar, and I don't intend on going alone.
But a moment ago you just said, I know what I just said. I've changed my mind. It turns out these cities are dangerous. You might be killed unexpectedly walking into any one of them, even by the officials.
Weiland blushed and looked away. You need to come to grips with this, I continued. At some time between now and later, one or more of your men are escorting me to Colmar. You're going to take me right up to the gates of Ing's fortress, after which you'll be free to go. That's the fastest way to be rid of me. I'll just keep coming back, otherwise, no matter what you do or how many times you do it. You'll be lying in your beds dying of old age, and there I'll be sitting at your side pestering you about that trip to Colmar. And after you've gone away with hell, I'll find your fucking children and bother them next.
You could walk there faster than that, Weiland complained.
Yes, but now I'm annoyed. I'm the worst kind of problem you could ask for, Weiland. I'm immortal, vindictive, a little pissed off, and in no fucking rush at all.
There's the messages, Captain,
a younger guard suggested. Weiland gave him a look like he'd sodomized a corpse.
Messages? I asked.
Yeah, he said. Then he cleared his throat.
Running town to town like. They carry him down the Ruhr on a flatboat. Going north, they ride him over land, but nothing beats the Ruhr for speed going south.
I looked at Weiland. That sounds hopeful. When does the next boat leave? I'll be on it.
Could be tomorrow, Weiland said.
He appeared to be thinking it over very carefully. I waited for one of his men to present any number of counter-arguments as to why this should not be done, but none of them spoke up. They all wanted me gone.
Put me on that boat, I said. I promise not to step off her deck until she pulls into Canal Street.
Then I held up my hands and said, Shackle me. I won't resist. Weiland stared at me a moment before pulling out a set of manacles from his satchel. He clapped them over my wrists, refusing to look anywhere but into my eyes, locked them, and then stepped a full 3 paces back. He pointed up the street and said,
This way?
Yes, I know where it is, I said.
As it happened, I didn't know where it was. Weiland took me to a part of the city I'd never seen before, far away from the Ruhr and into an area I would have sworn was populated with nothing more than fields of grass. I'd become turned around at some point, I decided, and he'd only taken me to some corner of Plotzdorf I'd not had occasion to visit, perhaps because it was absent of alehouses and brothels. One of the streets he took me down terminated in a dead end. It was walled on either side by lesser housings, not the half-timber kind that rose from the ground 3 and sometimes 4 levels high. These were rudely built, all rough-hewn planks. Some were roofed in animal hide. At the sack's ass was a squat little box of a building with a miserly wooden porch, an iron-banded door, and barred windows. He marched me toward this. When we reached the door, Weiland ordered me to stand aside on the porch while he fumbled with a heavy key ring. I watched as trembling fingers spooled each twisted hunk of black metal over the loop, somewhat thankful that these people had been inhibited from developing any kind of firearm. He was so unsettled he might have shot me in the stomach just trying to find his key. Eventually he did find it. After 2 false starts, he managed to get the correct one into the keyhole and turn. He sent me in ahead of him and ordered me to cut a straight line to the cell. Once inside, I turned and sat on a bench and watched him fight with the door, which was composed of a wooden frame supporting a grate of flat iron bands.
If you bring your hands near, I'll have those manacles off now, he said.
You speak differently from your men, I noted. Your tongue is educated.
Never mind my tongue, he muttered.
There was a series of clicks, and then my hands were free. Rather than bringing them back through the bars, I let them hang outside of my cage. I looked at him. Why haven't you sent for the sheriff?
There's no sheriff, sir. Hasn't been for some time. At least not as long as I've been here.
How long have you been here?
Too long.
He spoke more to himself when he said this. He looked at me a moment, seemed about to say something, then shook his head and turned away to approach a table in the far corner. On the floor was a wooden crate with a dusty old cloth jumbled up inside. He lifted it up and pulled out a gourd and cup. These he put on the tabletop and sat down. Are you thirsty at all? He asked.
No, I had water at the cradle, but thank you.
He nodded.
As you will.
Then he poured a reddish stream into the cup. I suspected mixed wine.
This is where you sleep at night?
He scoffed.
No, I have a home, please and thank you.
Ah, but there's no sheriff, and you'd rather not let me out of your sight. I apologize for the inconvenience. He looked at me suspiciously, then took a sip from his cup.
So we just sit here, I tried.
Yes, we just sit here. In the morning, I'll walk you down to the docks and inform Vault, and he'll be shipping down the river 2 days early. And from the coffers, I'll have to pay him recompense for whatever cargo he's forced to leave behind. Hopefully, his reputation for reliability will not be bruised over much. Then, deposited on the boat, I shall watch you until you're received by the King's Guard, and so be happily on my way back to a quiet and uneventful life thereafter.
You're coming with me. He peered at me through one glinting eye before taking a huge swallow.
It sure seems so.
You could send one of your men. He shook his head.
No, needs to be me.
He filled his cup, downed it, and filled it again.
Bastion's a good sort. He'll keep the peace well enough while I'm gone.
Take it slow with that drink, Wyland. You'll end regretting it, mixed or not.
He shot me an angry look, but his eyes softened soon after. He nodded slowly and said,
Yeah.
He had a sip. How old are you? I asked.
None of yours.
All right, but there's a reason I'm asking.
You're not young, but you're not old either.
Not old by truth, imagination, or failing eyes.
And you have the instincts of a leader of men. With whom did you fight?
What do you mean?
Whose banner did you march under?
When?
What do you mean, when? The war. Now he sat up and really looked at me.
I'm not that old, sir.
Huh. I thought about that. Maybe another line of work, then. This one seems not to agree with you.
Never mind about my fucking work,
he whispered, almost as if he didn't want me to hear. I hung my head and sighed. Not much of a conversationalist, I thought. I turned and went to the pallet, really just a pile of straw under canvas arranged over a wooden frame. I towed the mass with a boot.
No bedbugs in there, Wyland advised. I have them changed out and cleaned every week.
A credit to your profession, I said, and sat down. I put my back against the wall and waited. He took another drink, wiped his mouth, and said,
Best get some sleep. We leave early.
I'll be ready. I'm not tired now.
He shrugged as if it was nothing to him. I'd intended to let him awaken naturally on his own, but when the first shadows began to lengthen along the outside street, I grew anxious. Deciding it was better to be cautious, I approached the table where he'd collapsed upon his arms. I grasped him by the shoulder and began shaking, at first gently. Then, when he only groaned, less gently.
Wyland, you need to wake up. You're going to miss your boat.
He waved an arm at me and snarled.
Wyland, this is no good. They won't let me on the boat without you. You need to wake up. Wake up!
He finally lifted his head amidst all my shouting, peered at me through gummed eyes.
Udo?
He looked past me to the cage.
How in hell's name did you get out of your cell?
You forgot to lock it.
Up you go.
I took him by the arms and lifted, but he pushed me away.
A moment. Hang on. I'll get moving, just...
Then he just sat there, breathing heavily, but not moving otherwise. That wine wasn't mixed, I said, struggling to contain myself.
No, he agreed.
He smacked his lips sourly.
It should have been.
Can you walk?
Oh, sure. Just my fucking head.
Come on, I said, taking his arm again. I lifted gently, and this time he came shakily from the chair. Then, as I led him toward the door, he hesitated. "A moment," he complained, then staggered to a corner, uncinched his trousers, and urinated loudly into a pot. It took quite a while before he was fastening himself back up. "You need to relieve yourself?" he asked. "I don't think there's any more room in the pot." "I'll dump it." "You needn't. I'm fine. I don't need to." He looked at me closely. "How do you feel? Thirsty?"
"No, I'm well."
He was confused.
"Man doesn't need a piss in the morning. Usually means he's in terrible need of water. You're certain you're well?"
"I'm in far better shape than you."
He thought about that, then shrugged.
"Well, that's the truth."
"We really need to be going, Wyland."
"Sure, sure, just wait a while. Need to see to this."
He took the pot out to the porch and dumped it into the gutter, then returned.
"Need to put the manacles back on you?"
"I understand," I said.
"Good. Thank you. The drunks hate them."
"Yes, it's because they often have a hard time walking. It's difficult to save your face in a fall when your wrists are shackled."
"Anyways," he said.
He strode closer, eyes nearly invisible due to how tightly he squinted, and slapped them back over my wrists like a professional. "Hey," I smiled. "Your hands are steady." Then he looked at me sharply, so I shrugged and said, "I didn't mean anything by that. I know you're not a drunk. You're just afraid of me. And you had a little too much because of that."
"Not too afraid, apparently, if I forgot to lock the goddamn cell door."
"Yeah," I smiled. On the way to the docks, he led us to the corner of some sleepy neighborhood. An array of cozy little cottages all stacked upon each other and jammed into every corner. Thatched roofs and windows belching clean blue wood smoke. Children sometimes darted across the street. None of them were barefoot. Wyland stopped at the door of a smaller home, something squat and humble with two larger buildings to either side leaning inward, as if the small home between them had been carried over of a single piece and shoved in place by a giant, thereby upsetting the foundations of the surrounding structures. He reached for the door, paused, and then looked at me.
"I won't have you inside. You'll have to wait here."
He looked along the street, then down at my hands.
"Can I trust you to remain here without chaining you to the house?"
I gave him a look and said, "Hey, who woke you up this morning?" He shrugged, then nodded. I wanted to smile at him. He'd slept hard on his arm so that half of his mustache had curled upward and was reaching for his left eye.
"Only a moment," he said, and stepped inside.
While I waited, I heard voices inside the house. One of these was Wyland's deeper rasp, which was joined by another that was soft, patient, and caring. I caught myself leaning closer to the door to hear it. When I heard two smaller voices piping up to join the others, I stepped away and focused upon other things. A few moments later, Wyland emerged from the home carrying a small basket with a homespun cloth peeking from the top. His mustache was smoothed down. I wanted to apologize to him about his family, but thought better of it. I felt as though acknowledging what I'd heard would be some sort of violation. He descended the steps briskly and set off walking without a word, and I hurried to match his pace. He had good long legs, ground-eating legs, the locals would say. He was looking much better, and I told him so.
"Thank you," he answered. "I didn't have quite so much wine. I think sleeping on that damned table hurt more than the wine."
"Funny how quickly a man grows used to a warm bed," I tried. I regretted doing so as soon as I'd spoken. It was too close to commenting on his family. Thankfully, he only changed the subject. Holding the basket up between us, he said,
"I have some breakfast here. Nothing too heavy. Some apples and a bit of bread."
I thanked him, took the smaller of the apples for myself, and slipped it into a pocket inside my cape.
"If you can hear me, Irpisha, my compliments on these clothes. I think I would have adored this cape once upon a time."
I felt her smile within me.
"You aren't hungry?" Wyland asked.
I tend to slow when I eat on the run. I'll enjoy it once we're safely on the boat. He nodded at this and said, Well, let's beat the hoof then. Once we're headed downriver, I'll knock that iron off your wrists.